probably noticed, there have been plenty of politicians in regional Victoria over the last few days and in Melbourne as well. Indeed, that's where the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has been this morning at the fruit and vegetable wholesale markets at Epping. The Prime Minister joins us now to talk about some of the key issues facing agriculture. Prime Minister, thanks for your time on the Country Hour.
G'day, Nick. It's great to be here. I've been down here in Melbourne for a few days now. It was great to be out at the markets this morning and talking to all those wholesalers and others who are taking produce from all around the country, particularly here in Victoria.
And as I say, it's not just you that's been in Victoria, but we've seen Michael McCormack in Shepparton, David Littleproud and Bridget McKenzie in Mildura earlier this week. That all points to you being rather nervous about how regional Victorians are going to vote, doesn't it?
No, points to how interested we are in what's going on in regional Victoria and how much we're doing in regional Victoria, like our $1.6 billion, I'm sure, that Michael talked about with our regional rail program, the Ballarat upgrade, the Gippsland rail line upgrade, the North East rail line, the Warrnambool rail line, all of these major investments we're making right across regional Victoria and have been doing so for many years. So we're very committed.
Let's talk about some of the key issues that are facing agriculture at the moment. Obviously, decentralisation has been in the headlines this week with your decision to move some Murray-Darling Basin Authority staff to offices in Mildura and Griffith and Goondiwindi as well. That's been a decision made that a lot of people have criticised with the APVMA move when it was relocated to Armidale. Do you accept that decentralisation does mean that you're going to lose important staff, you're going to lose knowledge, that that's just a sacrifice you have to make if you want to decentralise?
Well, you're going to get good staff as well at the same time. You're going to get staff on the ground closer to where the issues are. I mean, the number of people have raised through the Murray-Darling Basin Plan discussions that have been held directly with my colleagues and others is people on the ground who are actually living in the communities where these issues impact. And so we'll have over 100 staff ultimately once that's complete. We'll get out of Canberra and we'll get into places, as you've said, in Goondiwindi, Griffith and Mildura, but also in the Murray Bridge in South Australia. So it is about getting closer to where people are living with the issues that the government is managing.
On the Basin Plan itself, there are seemingly more and more groups saying that now we can say the plan hasn't worked, it's done too much damage to rural communities. Do those voices make you think twice about whether the Basin Plan should be reviewed in its entirety?
Well, it's a very difficult issue, and it's a complex plan to manage. Its virtue is that it is a bipartisan plan. It has been in place for a number of years. It was put in by the previous government. It's been managed by us on the same bipartisan basis. So Tony Burke supports it, and David Littleproud has been managing it in the same bipartisan spirit. I mean, it's a very complex issue involving multiple states with all different claims. We've got users all along through the basin, which often have competing interests. And so it's not surprising that it will be contentious. But we're just seeking to manage it within the framework that has been agreed, and to deliver on the outcomes which we think is best for the country in partnership with the state governments, which are also very involved. There are a lot of stakeholders here, and it's not surprising that not all of those stakeholders at the same time are going to agree on everything.
So you don't see the need for a pause on the plan or a review?
Well, we'll continue to work the plan, but it's constantly being looked at as to how it can be done better. So I don't make any sort of false claims about it. It is incredibly complex, and that's not new. Those who live with the plan and live with the consequences of the plan and the issues around it understand that. And I haven't heard any sort of compelling alternatives that actually can have a coordinated and bipartisan approach to managing it.
Another issue that's been in the headlines this week is your government announcing that it's extended some visas for more skilled workers. The Victorian Farmers Federation, in reaction to that announcement, said the extension was largely meaningless and it won't help them. They say they want a specialised agricultural visa. They almost had it late last year. Why won't you give it to them?
We've already effectively got it. So, I mean, if it's quibbling about a name, well, I think that's just politics. We've been extending the access to these visas where they're necessary for the jobs that they're finding so difficult to access, and we've made further announcements in that area recently. So, I've been working closely with the National Farmers Federation on this issue. I announced significant expansions to it when I was at their conference last year, and that was very well received at the time. So, look, I... you know, you continue to try and work with the sector, but at the same time, you want Australians doing Australian jobs. So it's, you've got to get the balance right.
I mean, quite often, though, Australians don't want to do that work.
They want specifically, and that's because there are competing claims and competing interests.
Quite often, Australians don't want to do that work, though. That's the issue that a lot of farmers point out, is that they cannot get people to pick the crops.
Yeah, that's why we expanded the visas. That's why we did that. That's why our government has done that on a number of occasions now, and we'll continue to work closely with the sector to achieve it.
But no specialised agricultural visa,
well,
you can rule that out?
One. We actually already have one. It actually already works that way. So this is just a semantic discussion about titles.
But if farmers are saying that what is in place is not giving them what they need, then that's not enough, is it?
Well, that's a claim that's being made, but the program has been expanded quite significantly, and I want to commend David Littleproud on the work that he's done there. He's worked closely with the sector, and we'll continue to roll out expansions as the needs are presented. I mean, regional parts of the country need more people, and I'll have a bit more to say about that in between now and the election, and the way we can help better achieve that and get people into the regions where the work is there and where the people can do those jobs that farmers need. I'm very supportive of that. Have been now throughout my entire time in public office.
Now, to another issue that I know you've been talking about a lot, drought, obviously ongoing in a number of areas in Victoria. In Victoria, there have been ongoing calls for rate relief, where the state government and or local governments would reduce or subsidise council rates for farmers. Should the Victorian government put those rate reliefs in place, do you think?
I've discussed this with the Premier when after I was down in East Gippsland and in Wellington shires, two of the shires that we provided $1 million each to support what the work that they were doing in those communities. But ultimately, rate relief is a decision for the state government. They're responsible for state governments, and I would encourage all of the shires just to work directly with the state government on these things and set those priorities together with the state government.
You don't feel the need to put a bit of pressure on the state government to do that?
Well, I've discussed the matter with the Premier, but the way I have those discussions, I work well with the Premier here in Victoria, and you know, we're working on a lot of projects at the moment. I just listed at the top of the interview a lot of the big rail projects we're working on together, which will be very important. And then even at one we announced this week, which I know is in Melbourne, but has an important connection to the regional rail network, which is through the Sunshine Superstation, which is part of the Melbourne Airport Rail Link, a $10 billion program. Now, that Sunshine Station is one of three superstations, which is part of that project, but that one in particular will provide an important hookup into the regional rail network across Victoria.
Now, we're rapidly running out of time, Prime Minister, but you've been backing the National Farmers Federation's push to get agriculture to a $100 billion industry by the year 2030. The latest data from ABARES, which just came out last week, shows those numbers are actually shrinking, not growing. We're now at $58 billion. We were at $64
a few years ago. There's a drought.
But do you think that number of $100 billion is achievable by 2030?
Well, I'm always aspirational. I'm always up for how we can do better and how we can achieve more. I plan to create a further 1.25 million jobs as part of our national economic plan. 1.25 million have been established since we first came to government, and when we announced it being just 1 million jobs over 5 years, the Labor Party and everybody else said, oh, you can't achieve that. Frankly, it was the same thing they said to me when I said, they said they wouldn't be able to stop the boat. So I'm quite used to people telling me that things can't be done, and I'm quite used to getting them done.
And just finally, Prime Minister, do you think Victorian voters care about the Nationals' push for a coal-fired power station in Queensland?
It's not an issue that's raised here with me. I mean, the important thing we're doing for the power here in Victoria is to get the interconnector between Tasmania and Victoria. That's the Marinus Link. I announced the feasibility into that project with the Tasmanian Premier Will Hodgman just recently. Now, that will free up 400 megawatts straight away, but it'll also provide the incentive and the basis for Tasmania to expand their pumped hydro sector through Tassie Hydro, and that would provide reliable, sustainable power to Victoria, and I think it'll benefit both states greatly. So, I mean, that's where I think Victoria's been looking. I mean, we've never had any issue. In fact, we've been quite supportive of extending and the life of existing baseload power stations where we can. And I think that does take the pressure off in terms of power prices, particularly when you're talking about regional jobs that are connected with the aluminium smelter and things like this. That's very important. You've got to have baseload energy to do that. You can't do it only when the sun shines and the wind blows. So it's important to have that reliable power, and that's what our policies and that's what our focus is on delivering.
Scott Morrison, thanks so much for your time on the Country Hour.
Thanks, Nicola.
That's the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison.